This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, and today I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Paul Gorst.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Yeah, all good. Back to it on Sunday, weren't we, another Liverpool win, six on the bounce, 18 unbeaten, so all going well, but it's not about me today. Special guest.
Sorry to say, I'm even more delighted to say that. Joined by ex-Echo and goal scribe Neil Jones. How are you, Neil?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, don't downplay Ghosty.
I'm used to Ghosty. I see a lot of them.
I know I am the hired help today, but you know, Ghosty's still a big name.
Yeah, well, tell us before.
Big frame, I don't have a big name.
Big frame. before we crack on, tell us how we can follow you now, Neil, because you're your own boss these days, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. It's a long way. Like, obviously, different offers from when I worked here at the Echo, but yeah, it's a long time. Time flies, and it's over 5.5 years now. I finally got some power with myself, and it's a weird one. It's, you know, you go into the freelance world and you realise that it's just a bit like just getting jigsaw pieces and trying to put them all together. Yeah. So the main one really is sort of carrying on covering Liverpool on Substack, neilj.substack.com. Usual rubbish, really, to be honest, on there.
Make sure
you give me all your money to do that. But no, that's the main one. And then there's other bits and bobs, obviously, with Redmen TV, Anfield Rap, LFC TV, and some lesser known stuff for like sort of national newspapers for the agencies, where you might see me at Burnley or Preston or Blackpool or wherever. Which is actually quite nice to watch football without having to stress about whether Liverpool are going to win or not, or whether someone on Twitter is going to say I've given the wrong rating to someone. Yeah. So yeah, all that going on, but it's a far cry from the heady days of 2016, 2017, 2018, when it was Blood Red Podcast on a daily basis.
Well, I'm not just saying this, it's an essential follow for Liverpool fans, your Substack. It's really good. Really enjoy it. And for all your listeners, what was it again?
neilj.substack.com. And you can also find a YouTube channel as well, which just search Neil Jones and you'll find it.
Great stuff. Well, three happy men, I think, today. Another win for Liverpool, up to second in the table. Ghosty, it was a good performance, wasn't it? And West Ham were a good side.
West Ham are really good, aren't they, at the moment? I'd kind of put them in that bracket just below the top teams, you know, alongside maybe your Brentfords and your Villas and West Ham. And I read Chris Bascombe's piece just then before we come in, and he called them the most polished West Ham side in 40 years or so. And it's hard to disagree with it, you know, with the likes of Lucas Paqueta, who I thought was superb. So it was never going to be an easy one for Liverpool, and West Ham normally give them a game, don't they, even at Anfield, when Liverpool tend to come out on top. And from the first kind of 10 or 15 minutes, you could tell it was going to be a difficult day, and Liverpool needed to be, you know, above average to get anything from the game. And, you know, so it proved to be. I thought West Ham started probably the better of the two, and it took Liverpool 15, 20 minutes to kind of wake out of the slumber. But it's become a little bit of an alarming trend for Liverpool, hasn't it? Starting sluggishly and having to feel the way into the games, and the game, you know, the longer the game goes on, the stronger Liverpool seem to get. So I thought they were quite fortunate, actually, when they took the lead. And it was no surprise when West Ham got themselves back into it with a wonderful diving header from Bowen. But like I say, as the games go on at the moment, Liverpool tend to get better. So I thought they were, again, very good second half. Seems to be the thing at the moment, doesn't it, against Wolves, against Lask, and now against West Ham. In the second half, they are much better. If they can kind of do what they do in the second half, in the first half of games, then they'll have much more comfortable afternoons at the office. But the scoring goals, four games in a row now they've scored three. You know, three games on the bounce, they've won 3-1. And everywhere you look, there's loads of positives, you know, individual stories, players having really strong starts to the season. And I think Jürgen Klopp will be delighted, really, if they could just kind of shake off those sluggish 20, 25 minutes at the start of games, then the sky's the limit for this team at the moment. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into some of the individual performances, Neil, but it is, as much as it is alarming that the slightly slow starters, and they didn't fall behind yesterday, but they did have a bit of adversity in the first sort of half an hour. It's encouraging, isn't it, how they don't seem to let their heads drop. They seem to be able to play their way into games. they're dangerous. Yeah. I mean, they showed all those qualities, didn't they, yesterday?
Yeah, and I think more so, they showed that they're ready to go 90 minutes, aren't they? And I think that's a little bit of a trend in the Premier League. I think some of the, outside the top six sides, I think a lot of teams are really putting all their eggs into the first half and, you know, really trying to sort of catch teams out and get themselves ahead in games and give them something to hold on to. And you do see them fade, don't you? I mean, I completely agree with Gorski's point about West Ham. You know, you look, they brought on Mohamed Kudus, Danny Ings, and Pablo Fornals, and they didn't bring on Benrahma, and there was another forward as well, Maxwell Cornet, on the bench. So you're like, wow, they've got a bit of an armoury there, haven't they? But you saw that they tired in the second half. I mean, we spoke just before we came on about Thomas Suchek. To me, it was like he powered down, didn't he? And just sort of, you know, just have to get him out there.
Like watching Gorski after 10 minutes.
But you saw that Liverpool got stronger and stronger. I do think there is a trend of that. The teams, maybe with Liverpool, but I think generally with other teams as well at the top, they think, let's have a right good go with them, see if we can get ourselves ahead. And then hopefully we cling on. We saw Sheffield United do it against Tottenham, Wolves, I think, put a lot into the first half, and you saw it cost them. So I think Liverpool, maybe, while you want to start quickly, I think they do have a confidence in them that, like, almost like we'll give them a couple of early rounds and we'll sort of come on strong in the second half of the fight and we'll win it. They were a bit fortunate, you know, it was a penalty, but it came out of nowhere, really. Yeah. And it was almost the first real sort of sight that they'd had.
The little touch from Nunes as well.
It's a little bit fortunate, of course. Yeah, and it's silly from a Gerd, isn't it? You know, it was obviously going to happen. What happened almost? But yeah, I think you look at Liverpool last season. There was just a lot of feeling there from the crowd as much as the players. Yeah. Almost, it was like this isn't going to be a good day this at all. And with Liverpool at the moment, I think there's still some frustrations, but there's also a feeling that, even if they were 1-0 down at half time, you'd be like, they'll sort this out in the second half. They'll come out firing, and you know, they didn't have to this time around because it was level. But they certainly put their foot on the gas in the second half and were by far the better side.
Yeah, well, one of the players, Gorski, that epitomised that really was Alexis McAllister.
Yeah,
Klopp admitted himself, started pretty slowly, seemed to give a few passes away, but I'd say by the end of the first half, was sort of getting into his groove, and then the second half was really good. Obviously set up the goal for Darwin Nunes. But what did you make of his performance on the whole?
Yeah, it was exactly like you described. Really started a little bit on the back foot and grew into the game and got better. And it's an interesting one with him at the moment, because I don't think he'd necessarily be wanting to be Liverpool's number six. And I think maybe there's a few who might agree with him there. But for now, while Gravenberch gets attuned to things and, you know, the way it is that they are trying to kind of reshape him into that over the long term, and they obviously got Endo for, you know, when they need to break the glass. At the moment, it's a little bit of a work in progress. You know, we know he's really comfortable in possession and good on the ball and picking his passes, but I'm not sure he's got the kind of physical attributes to be an outstanding number six for the team with ambitions like Liverpool. But you know, when he does get on the ball, he can pick the passes like the one for Nunes. It was a superb ball over the top, wasn't it? I don't think too many people saw that was on when he clipped it through. And yeah, he grew into the game. I think we can afford him the performance at Wolves last week. I don't think that was his fault, really. I don't think Klopp should have been picking him, to be honest. But he very much kind of epitomised the performance as a whole. Grew into the game and got better as it went on. And I think maybe with someone alongside him in there, he'll start to show a little bit more. But for that, you know, at the moment, it's a learning curve for him, and you know, it's a big step up, isn't it, coming from Brighton? You know, he was one of the outstanding midfielders of the Premier League last season for the Brighton team, who finished sixth. But it's a big step up for him, and you know, he's had a decent start, but it's not been an outstanding one like the fellow next to him, Szoboszlai, and I'm sure we'll come on to him. But certainly the assist was excellent. That's what he's all about, I think.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, Neil, what have you made of him so far in the hole? Because, like, he's been asked to do a challenge and it's a different position for him in a new team, as of course he's had a step up. But he has shown flashes of real quality. The opening day, the ball out to Salah at Chelsea, and, you know, obviously the ball yesterday. He's got real quality on the ball, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think you've also got to remember that Liverpool are very used to playing with certain types of players in midfield, aren't they? So there will be a temptation to sort of judge him against Fabinho. Mm.
Yeah.
And for players to play as if he's Fabinho, you know, and you think of, you know, I don't think Fabinho's a bit stronger and taller and more physical, but I don't think he'd fancy sort of having some of the balls wrapped into him the way McAllister does. And McAllister's a lot more reliable in terms of, you know, playing with his back to play and one touch, and you know, you feel safe, don't you, when he's got the ball. I think there's a case to be made going forward of having two in there in certain games and having a number 10, you know, whether it's Gakpo, whether it's Gravenberch, it could be Curtis Jones, I think, could do that role. I think Harvey Elliott could probably do that role in certain games. So I think there is a case to be there. And I think Liverpool, it was telling that Liverpool looked so secure there against Wolves with two in there, didn't it? You know, there wasn't a number six, really. It was just two central midfielders. Yeah. I think that there is a case that might bring out a bit more of McAllister. You could even have him in the number 10, you know, the way he plays the game. But he's had a difficult start because you think, really, first game of the season, Chelsea away, tough game. You know, whatever Chelsea struggles since, that was a good result for Liverpool, you know, in the circumstances. Sent off in the second game. Yeah. Newcastle, 10 men, you know, played well against Villa, obviously. Wolves had all the caveats of his travel and the altitude and just a general poor performance from the team. So it's not been a flying start from him, but I don't have any concerns about whether he's good enough for Liverpool. You can see the way he plays. You can see the trust that the players have in him. And I was surprised. I did some like sort of looking at the numbers. And I think he had a 90-odd% pass completion rate. You know, it wasn't like he was giving the ball away left, right, and centre. He was getting stuck in. There was a fella by us in the main stand. I mean, Gorsi sits just along the row from me, but I heard him sort of get him off the pitch. You know, sort of just before he sets up the goal, and it was sort of because he got shrugged off by Thomas Suchek, and I was thinking, well, you know, he is what he is. You can't body 6'6" Czech fellas, you know. But he still does compete, you know. And I think that's part of it. It's not Jürgen doesn't want people who are just going to absolutely boss physical duels. He wants three or four of them to do it and to get in the right position. And you know, there was plenty of times yesterday where he maybe didn't win the ball, but he ushered someone into a position where Curtis Jones went and won it, or Robertson went and won it, or Szoboszlai. So he's doing a good job for the team, definitely. And I think there's still a search for the right combination and the right balance for Liverpool long term. But the midfield compared to last season at the start is night and day.
We were speaking to Klopp a couple of weeks back, weren't we? The Access Centre in one of his post-match press conferences. And I think between us, we were sort of talking to him about different type of midfield he's got now, you know. Mm. It's not a Fabinho and Henderson and even a Wijnaldum where it's pressure machines all over the pitch. It's very much about technical security and comfortable in possession.
It's a bit more risky. That's what it didn't pay off at Wolves, did it? And I think the biggest problem Liverpool had was they took a lot of risks and the players just weren't quite at their best. Yeah. So they were giving the ball away in sort of what looks like mad areas. You're like, what are you doing? But if it comes off, as in that Chelsea game where you play in, play out, and then all of a sudden you're breaking, it works a treat. But it's so different, isn't it, to what we've been used to? Where, like, I mean, Liverpool, apart from Henderson, really was the only one, but Liverpool, when they played with Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Milner, whoever, they never really switched the play. There was none of that. It was all just short and sort of get it out to the fullbacks, wasn't it? There's a lot more through the middle of the pitch now, definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's what Klopp was driving at when he said, you know, the players he did have were outstanding footballers like James Milner and Fabinho and Henderson. And the reason he didn't really play all this, you know, one-touch, you know, short stuff was because they wanted to win. Yeah. They knew what they were in the team for, to press, to win the ball and keep it short and simple to the likes of the fullbacks in the front three. But it is I don't know whether it's been through design or accident or maybe a little mix of both, but it's a different profile of midfield this summer or this season, and I think it's something that maybe supporters will have to get used to over time.
Yeah, I think it's up to Liverpool to play a slightly different way, isn't it? And I agree with what you said, Neil. I had a fella next to me who was giving McAllister a bit of stick, certainly in the first half. And I think in the first half, West Ham managed to stamp their style on it. Yeah. But you could see as Liverpool stepped it up and started getting hold of the ball, then having McAllister as opposed to a Fabinho there makes all the difference, because suddenly you can start attacking from different positions. And Fabinho very rarely, I do remember one against United to Mane, but very rarely plays that sort of pass that you see from Nunes, doesn't he?
No, absolutely. I mean, it was such a good ball from McAllister. I didn't actually realise, because Nunes doesn't actually make the run.
I thought
Nunes has given the point of, like, you know, play me in. And he doesn't really. Nunes almost goes, oh, wow, like, you know, that's a ball's on its way. Yeah. But it's perfectly judged. Because especially as well, I mean, listen, we don't know what footballers are thinking during games. But he must know there was a little couple of moments where he had the ball and he never gave it away, but he just took a little bit too long on it. And you could almost hear the crowd go, oh, God, like move the ball. Curtis gets it quite a lot, doesn't he? Where it's like, it's almost like a bit of pressure of, come on, play a bit faster. So to play a pass like that, if that just runs through to the goalkeeper, that's like, oh, my God. You know, like it shows a real bit of belief in his own ability, doesn't it, to do it. Same with, I mean, that's the thing I love about Nunes the most. Yeah. Of all the things, you know, we were talking again before we came on about the reaction he gets from the crowd and how much they've always been on his side. The thing I love most about him is I don't think you could tell. He could have missed 10 chances or scored 10 goals. And you wouldn't know the next time he strikes the ball at goal, he does the same thing. And, you know, you think of that, really, he's just missed a sitter, really, hasn't he, at the cop end by rushing it and taking it first time. No hint in his mind he was bringing that down. It's like, I'm going to volley that in the corner. I think it's real good sort of signs of a good mentality from the players. I think the same about Diaz when I see him. You know, I think Diaz is a lot of the time, I think Diaz is, it's sort of more excitement than delivery with him, where I think, oh, something's going to happen. It doesn't. But every time he gets the ball, the feeling's the same. It's never one of them where you think, oh, don't give it to Diaz. Don't worry about Diaz. He's not going to do anything. Yeah. You always think he's going to do something and think he does as well. And those three, you know, they're only, what, 24, 26? They've got the best years to come at Liverpool. And if you've got them, you've got Gakpo, you've got Szoboszlai, Curtis, Harvey, Gravenberch. There's a lot of young players there that look like they're stepping up a level in terms of, you know, their own careers, almost, in terms of going from that type of player to that type of player.
Yeah, I think you can apply that mentality as well to Szoboszlai, because a few times yesterday, again, he was a little bit sloppy in the first half. But I remember at one point, I'm pretty sure it was over on the far touchline, I was in the main stand, and I think he was sort of out-muscled and got back and then flicked it. And you're thinking, like, the confidence of this lad who's just basically lost the ball and back-heeled it back up the line and got Liverpool out of danger. So it's just that mentality of not letting things get to them.
I think he's been huge. I know Gorsi said we'll talk about him. I don't know if he's on the agenda.
Talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, he's been huge for Liverpool. And I wrote a piece recently, Substack, about, it's not the player, it's the sort of class about him. Just reminds me of Xabi Alonso when he came to Liverpool. And it was the fans' reaction to him and the teammates' reaction, where it's almost like you don't need to worry about him. Just he can handle this. Some players come in and you almost, Nunes was probably one where you thought you need the team to sort of really get round him and be like, come on, you can do this for it. It's almost like, don't worry about him, just leave him alone. He's got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the best thing I would say about him is, if you were lazy sort of doing your Wikipedia sort of scouting of him, you'd have said, oh, he's a bit of a luxury player, you know, like he's got real quality, but can he this and that?
Yeah.
He looks the opposite to me. He looks like someone who's the first thing I would take in the scouting report would be grafts non-stop for 90 minutes, and then has got quality on top. So I think he's made a massive difference to Liverpool this season.
There's an arrogance about him, Gorsi, that the best players have, isn't there?
Yeah, what I love about him is he's obviously always been technically gifted, but he's an athlete as well. So in the 95th minute, when you need, you know, a little bit of quality, he's still got that because he's fit as a fiddle and he runs all day. And there was a period there, I think it was might have been like the 93rd minute or something, and he's pressing them in their own, you know, 25 yards out, closing down, winning the ball back, and Liverpool are on the attack again. He's just tailor-made to be a Klopp midfielder, isn't he? You know, in terms of, we've just spoken then about the new profile of, you know, technically gifted midfield versus the old profile where it was a little bit more energetic and, you know, fitness-based. He's got both, and every week you're watching him now and you're thinking, you know, he's a shouting man of the match because he's just so consistent. I thought he was very good in the second half against Wolves last week when he dropped back into a little bit of a number six position. Again, he was excellent yesterday, and, you know, every game now you're watching him and he's one of the best players. So he's made a superb start, and it's going to be fascinating to see where he goes because he's only 22. So his best years are ahead of him.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, let's complete the midfield. Curtis Jones, yesterday, we had a quick chat before we came on air. I thought Jones was really good, effective with the ball. He's done really well, hasn't he, Neil, to sort of force his way, not just into that midfield, but force his role in the team. You know, it looks like to me he leads the press for Liverpool, and he's an outlet on the left-hand side, and he puts a lot of good work in. He's very unselfish.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And I think he's one of them players that's developing into... He might be one that... maybe late in his career, people start to sort of question and say, well, what does he actually do? And the defence will be, well, ask his managers what he does, you know, and it'll almost be that sort of Genie Wijnaldum kind of element to it, where it's like, he might not win the ball, but he's a reason we won the ball, or he might not set the goal up, but he's a reason that we had space, or that kind of thing. And if I think back to when he was coming through, you'd never have said he'd end up like this. No. You'd have said, if you'd have said he was going to fail at Liverpool, you would say that they couldn't find a space for him because he was too much of a maverick. He was too individualistic, or you know, you couldn't quite, you know, he wasted the ball too much, or he tried too many silly things. He's almost the complete opposite of it. He doesn't really do it, and there's a couple of occasions this season where he's played a crossfield ball, and I've almost sort of, it's almost jarred where you go, oh, okay, it's just going to hit a 50-yard pass. He never does, because he lends it and he gets it back. Yeah. But there's a brilliant moment in the first half where I think it was Edson Álvarez closed him down, and he had his back to play, and I think he fouled him, and he never got the foul. And Curtis, it was almost like he went, oh, we want to play like that. Yeah. And he just sort of got his body in and just twisted, turned, twisted. It was zooming, it was, wasn't it? With the centre half. That was it, yeah. And he's really good at it. He's just so sort of secure in possession. Like I say, backs he's another one, like Szoboszlai, an athlete. He's got good size. Yeah. I mean, he finished his chance off that was offside really well, didn't he? You know, like, he's got that in his, like, he's technically really good around the penalty area. Sometimes you really want him to back himself a little bit more with that kind of thing. But I really do think it's quite telling that Liverpool have bought lots of midfielders. They've got midfielders who are doing okay in Harvey Elliott and, you know, a few younger ones as well. But as soon as he was ready, he was straight back in the side. And I do think that when you're playing McAllister in that role, you probably need to have Curtis as well as Szoboszlai. I don't think you could do it with McAllister and, let's say, Elliott from the start. I think you have to have those two athletes to cover the width of the pitch.
Yeah, I'd like him to have a few more shots. And he did, to be fair, yesterday. I think one had a couple blocked, one deflected, almost went in. And then, like you say, took the goal, which, to be fair, we've talked all about McAllister's ball. That was an incredible ball as well from Szoboszlai.
Yeah, it was. Just clipped over. I mean, he's been an ever-present now, pretty much, Jones, hasn't he, for, you know, 6 months either side of start of this season and the back end of last season. Was it 12 in a row he played, I think, something like that?
Chelsea, he played from Chelsea away.
From Chelsea onwards. That was the beginning of April. That was actually when this unbeaten run started. So, he's, you know, as Klopp might say, he's in a good moment, and it seems to be getting longer and longer. So I think the 21s was a big moment for him as well. Obviously, he was credited with the goal in the final, wasn't he? Which he should be fortunate to get that. But I think his overall performances were, you know, I am the standout man in this squad, and I'm going to take this into the senior side of Liverpool, and he's been excellent.
Yeah, my heart was in my mouth when he went down. It was in the second half or the first half, but I thought you don't want him to get another injury.
First half, he got one left on him, didn't he? It was just, like, sort of landed on him.
Yeah. You just don't want him to get injured now, do you? Because he needs to stay.
That's what I mean. Listen, he's over 100 games for Liverpool, and I don't think people sort of realise how big that is in terms of, never mind just generally, but the era that he's played in as well for Liverpool, where, you know, every game pretty much has mattered in that period. But he's also missed a lot of football through, you know, sort of unlucky, you know, poked in the eye, and he got one whacked in the mouth in a pre-season friendly right at the start of the season. He had that tibia injury last season that, when Gorsy and I spoke to him at Forest, and he was explaining it was just, he said to us, and he said, it's mad.
Yeah.
The injury's mad. And when he described it, we were like, yeah, it does sound, you know, he's like, I can play, but they don't want me to because it might turn into a break or a fracture. Yeah. And, you know, it must have been so frustrating for him. So, yeah, keeping him fit, certainly for him, I think, keeping him fit. And now he does feel as well. I mean, I remember there was a little passage in Pep Linders's book that came out, obviously, last year, where he's talking about a game that he played. I think it was, they played Leicester just after the Carabao Cup final. And he sort of got taken off after an hour, maybe. And he said they were playing on the following day. It might have been Norwich in the FA Cup. And Pep said, they had a conversation with Klopp. He said, when do we ever give him a second chance? You know, he gets a start. Yeah. And if he doesn't absolutely smash it, he comes out the team. He said, so we've decided to give him a second chance. He's taken this time, hasn't he? He's really taken that first chance, second chance. And now I think he's one. You're looking at Ryan Gravenberch. There's a lot of people with big expectations for him. I'm one of them. he's got to get Curtis Jones out of the team first. Yeah. I think, you know, and it's not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination. It's one of them that you might have to be patient and sort of he might have to take his chance.
He goes back to the point you were making earlier on about the kind of general age profile of the squad now. Mm-hmm. You know, he's, what is he, 21, 22?
22, Curtis, yeah.
You know, alongside Trent, who's 24, Canate, 24.
Yeah.
We've already spoken about Szoboszlai and McAllister and Nunes and someone else in there.
Yeah. Well, Bajcetic is there, obviously, Elliot.
Yeah, Elliot.
It's most of the team now, isn't it?
There's only a handful of lads who are pushing late 20s, early 30s, isn't there? And I think that's been a conscious effort from the club over the summer. But now you're looking at it thinking, you can see why Klopp talks about it being year one and all that kind of stuff. It's a team that's built now for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I want to talk about Nunes, but before, and just a quick word on, I thought Joel Matip was excellent yesterday in a tough battle against Antonio, who maybe said a few things before the game, but I like Antonio. He's an honest player. You know the style you get, and he's effective.
Well, you know what it's like when you've got to say stupid things to sell a podcast. You've got to get stupid guests on everything.
I thought Matip, Neil just equipped himself really well. And Liverpool, you could see in the second half, I felt like they'd been told, get higher up the pitch because he's not going to be as effective.
Bold selection as well from Jürgen, wasn't it? You know, I think a lot of people expected Konaté to start. Maybe a little message to Konaté because I think he was a bit lax against against Lask. You know, he didn't have his best game, and maybe there's a little bit of a, you don't just think you're the man now. Yeah, you know, we've still got this. And I think I remember Matip playing well against West Ham away at the back end of last season. I think he got the winner, didn't he?
He scored, didn't he?
And, you know, maybe there's just a sort of a good style fit that, you know, Antonio's a handful, isn't he? You know, he's physical, but Matip's really good in the air, really dominant. And I thought he was excellent. I thought Joe Gomez as well. Yeah. I have to give a shout out to him. I mean, moment of the match for me was Joe Gomez turning to Sergio Busquets and taking three out. But really good. And really important, I think, for them to have put in some good performances early in the season. You know, you think of Gomez against Aston Villa, the two of them against Newcastle in that tough game. They're under a bit of fire, aren't they? And there are people, and one of them, who really think Liverpool do need to strengthen their defence, or should have strengthened their defence in the summer. But really good for them to reassure a few people that, look, if it is called upon, you know, they can do a more than passable job. And, you know, Matip had a really tough game against Wolves last week, and he's bounced back well.
Yeah. I suppose my issue with Matip wasn't so much his ability, because we know that it's just fitness, and probably goes for all the centre halves. But yeah, Gorsley, I thought yesterday, and again, he brings something to Liverpool further up the pitch, doesn't he? As well,
he does. It felt like that was very much a tactic as well in the first half for him to get on the ball and push forward and try and move one or two players around and unsettle them. But yeah, he was excellent yesterday, and. You know, we haven't been able to say that enough, to be fair, about him or Gomez. You know, a couple of years ago, you're looking at it, and I was one of the ones who said that Liverpool had the best collection of centre-halves in the league. And last season, I don't think either of those players were anywhere near where they felt they should be. But a pair of them have started really well this season, haven't they? And, you know, fair play to Gomez in particular, because he's a centre-half who's being asked to play right-back, and not only play right-back, but also fill in for Trent Alexander-Arnold and play as a number six and play as a number eight and whatever else. And that's not quite his natural game, is it? But he did it enthusiastically. He got down the wings at times last season. He's starting to get into good attacking positions, so maybe one day we'll even see that, you know, mythical Joe Gomez goal.
That when he done that turn, I was thinking, he almost was worth 30 yards of that, wasn't it? It was like one of them. You've done that. Like, just if you're gonna score, it's gonna be that Vincent Kompany sort of one, isn't it? You know, you're not gonna get a tap in. So, but I think Joe Gomez, you can see why every summer there's sort of or every window there's this idea that is he one that could raise a bit of money and he could bring someone in as his best days gone. You can see why Jürgen must absolutely love him because there's someone who plays two positions. He can play both of them at a high level. Yeah. Of course, he's had some struggles at centre back, but what an attitude he's got on him. You know, like he got rinsed against Pedro Neto in that first half, and look how strongly he's come back since. You know, 45 minutes in the second half at Wolves, excellent. Good sub appearance against Lask in midweek, and then a really strong 90 against West Ham. Yeah. Top man.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, someone was saying to me actually yesterday about Joe Gomez that they've asked him a couple of times to speak this season when he's kind of walked past, and he's just not now. He just seems to be keen to keep his head down and just build on what's been a good start for him. And
it's fair, isn't it?
I think Liverpool need him and Matip to be good, because they're not blessed with loads of options, are they, at centre back or especially at right back? So, yeah, good on them, and let's hope they build on it.
Let's talk Darwin Núñez. Obviously, you sort of saw all sides of Darwin Núñez yesterday. He missed a big chance, scored a really good finish. But, I mean, what I like about Ngosi, we're starting to see other sides of his game. You know, I think there was a few times, I know they scored directly from, but he got back and won a tackle just before their goal. He seems to be... Klopp didn't seem to trust him, I don't think, last season fully. No. But now there feels like there's more trust. It feels like he understands his role a bit more in the side.
Yeah, if you look at what Klopp said after the game, you know, obviously there'd be a lot of focus from the likes of us on the goal and the finish. But Klopp's talking about how good he's defending from the front now, and that certainly wasn't the case last season, was it, when the language barrier was an issue and he wasn't doing what Roberto Firmino did or what Cody Gakpo does. But certainly seems to be improving on that, and he's just always a threat, isn't he? I think you've called him a chance magnet in the past.
Yeah.
Every game he plays, he's getting two or three really good opportunities to add to his tally, and his goal was superb yesterday, I thought. And yeah, he's probably in the strongest period of his Liverpool career now, and it's just a case of building on it. I think looking at the numbers this morning, and wrote in the verdict last night that he's goal involvement every 52 minutes this season, and add in the minutes that he's played for Uruguay, but he's got a couple of assists for Marcelo Bielsa's new look Uruguay, and it's it doesn't go much further than that. It is around about 52, 53 minutes for his goal involvement. So I suppose, like, similar to Gomez and Matip, it's just a case of building on it and carrying it on, because he's neck and neck with Salah at the top now, and he with goals for each. So I think Salah will still win that race, but it's going to be an interesting one to watch all season.
Do you think that Salah Núñez axis will sort of remain first choice now?
Yeah, I thought again another, obviously I wouldn't say it was a bold selection, but one that you would have understood if Klopp hadn't. He played 90 against Lask, and he's kept him in the side, and that, I don't think that would have happened last season. I think he would have, no matter what he'd done in the game, I think he would have brought Gakpo in. And also the fact that it's Gakpo and Jota are doing all right as well. You know, it's not like, oh, well, he's obviously going to play because the replacements aren't up to it. He's got competition, but he's got to be on the pitch for me. You know, I think it's clear now that he's used to what Liverpool want, and they're used to what he needs in the team. And, you know, there was a bit last season, wasn't there, where it did feel a little bit like Liverpool just sort of knocked balls in behind for him to chase onto and sort of, you know, give him, just do something with that. Now it does feel like he's a lot more sort of connected to the team, isn't he? And, you know, really good. We saw it against Lask in both the two goals, the second and third goal. Yeah. Great hold up play, and then winning the ball high up for the third goal. You saw that for the penalty hold up play, isn't it? Picking the right pass, obviously, and then quick enough to get into the box as well to make an impact. And his movement in central areas is outstanding, really. You know, I don't know how, because I don't know the position, but you know you're doing something right when the chance he misses, he's in the centre of the goal and Liverpool are playing through the centre of the pitch and he's still got 2 yards of space. Yeah. He's doing something really right, isn't he, to take defenders away. And I think if he can just, I know it's a big, big if, but if he can just start scoring the ones he should score.
Yeah.
That's the one. I think his numbers will be off the chart. It'll be 30 plus goals a season because he gets that many chances. Yeah. And the one thing that he doesn't quite have yet is when he goes through, or when it's sort of, there's a little bit of time for it, you don't always think he's going to score, but I think it will come. I really do. I think it reminds me a little bit of Fernando Torres.
Yeah.
When he came to Liverpool, where Fernando Torres felt like the harder the chance, the more likely he was to score. If it's a first time header or whatever, with Torres, he became sort of cold and really sort of clinical with his finishing. I think Núñez has got the same development to me.
I'd agree with that totally. There's a, when he's sticking the instinctive ones away, that's when he scores, and that's when he looks like a £64 million striker. It's when he's got one or two seconds to think about it, that's when he might snatch
that one
at
the weekend. Is like typical, isn't it? Núñez, he did have a couple of seconds to think about
and
it.
I was thinking it when I was watching the last game on Thursday, you know, when he has that close range header and the keeper pulls off a great save. if he starts sticking away, the chances he should score, his numbers are going to go up and up.
There's an element, I think the one on Thursday, I don't really know what else you can ask him to do. You know, the commentator was immediately said, great save, but he should have scored. I don't always think they both can be true. You know, it was a great save, but what more, he's yard out from goal and just has to quickly direct it.
You see improvements in him. Most definitely. I mean, look, he was denied a goal by a really good save from Mariola. It was a really good effort. It wasn't on the run near post, low down. But you see the improvement in the two goals at Newcastle. They're the ones I'm talking about where it's like, right, there's your chance. You're through. Can you get your finish right? Can you be accurate? You know, if you think back to last season, there were so many. There was a game at City in the Carabao Cup where he had about six in the same position. He put them all wide or hit the goalkeeper. And you think, just... can you start finding the far corners with those finishes? Yeah. I think he can. He will be seeing him when he came to Anfield with Benfica. I think he had two disallowed
for scoring, didn't he?
He was just so sort of relaxed in his finishing. Yeah. He hasn't always looked like that for Liverpool. He's looked a little bit sort of hurried in it. But I definitely think, look, he's still so young, isn't he? What, 23, is he?
24
now, yeah. He's so, you know, he's got so much left in his career and he's already made such big steps in it. I definitely think, you know, it's only a matter of time before we're talking about Nunes in, you know, 15, 20 plus goals a season.
Just quickly, Gusty, a word for the two fellas either side of him, because I don't think you'd look at Salah and Diaz in that game and say it was either of their best game, but they're so effective, aren't they? Even sort of quietly effective now. Salah obviously gets his goal, but he's always involved. Same really for Diaz.
Yeah, in terms of Diaz, I thought Neil was spot on when he said before about, you know, sometimes it's more expectation and anticipation than, you know, them actually delivering. But, you know, every time he gets it, he's going to run at the right back and he's going to give him something to think about, and that might lead to something. And you've just got to persevere. You know, sometimes he might have an off day and sometimes he might grab a couple of goals. And I think he started the season well in general, hasn't he? Well, he seems to have nailed down that left-hand spot now. When you think of the players who can play there, you know, different types of players, but they're all capable. Gakpo, Jota and Nunes, and he seems to be the very much the Liverpool left winger now, doesn't he? Salah is Salah again, you know, a bit of a quiet game for him, but he scores and he almost sets, was it Nunes up with a kind of measured ball through, and 13 and that's 13 now, is it, for him in terms of goal involvements. I made the point in the Blood Red column on Friday, for all this talk of Saudi Arabia, and you know, it's gone now, but it's going to come back in January. Yeah. I just think, you know, money aside, why? You know, he's still one of the absolute best players in the world. He wants to break every record going at Liverpool, so why can't he just carry on doing it? Because he's showing no signs of slowing down, is he? You know, that since he signed that contract, was it kind of close to 18 months ago now? He's still Liverpool's main man, and you know, for all the talk of Nunes emerging and Gakpo developing and whatever else, Salah is still going to be the main man. He's going to be important for the rest of them in that front line in terms of, you know, how to maximise your talents and how to do it over a period of years. We were talking yesterday, weren't we, at Anfield about and Salah was going for the Golden Boot Award. It was 5 years ago with Aubameyang and Mane. And Mane's in Saudi Arabia now. And where's Aubameyang? Is he at Lyon?
Marseille.
And Salah's still at Liverpool being the main man. And that's the kind of longevity that you've got to aspire to.
Yeah, and they help Nunes no end, don't they? Having two players like that who are tactically so good, consistent, and they're so confident in their roles.
Work hard. And you know, if you were Klopp talking about Nunes' hold-up play you could look at Mo Salah and say, wow, you know, talk about, you feel like Salah could play as a number nine. If he wasn't so amazing at everything else, you could say, well, actually, you know what, I wouldn't mind him as a focal point. He can hold off any defender. He did it in the first half, didn't he? Won a free kick off someone where it was ridiculous, really, out the upper body strength. He's got so much about him, and I think what you're seeing as well from him is this real reinvention or readjustment of what he does during games, in terms of he doesn't really have that, or he doesn't really try to use that searing pace that we saw early in his career when he was a proper winger, really, wasn't he? And then he developed into this goal scoring great. But now he's also got that, like, almost like Lionel Messi passes, those ones from the right where he sort of gets on his left foot and you think he can put a far post, he can put it right down the line, he can do the outside of his foot, you know, he can play a little 1-2, he can do that, you know. There's a real sort of roundedness now to his game, and it's really good to see, and I'm fully with Gorsty on that. You know, I'd be fascinated to know sort of the conversations going around this Saudi Arabia thing with Salah, because the one that I would be having if he was my mate or my client or, you know, my teammate would be, like, you can still win everything in Europe, and I mean individually and collectively. You know, you could still be sort of, you can have all that recognition that you probably think you haven't had or you haven't had enough of, you know, Ballon d'Ors and things like that, you know, Premier League Player of the Year or whatever, Golden Boots. It's all still there for you, you know. Just don't cash out too quickly, almost, you know. That'll all still be there in the later years, you know, when you get to the Ronaldo sort of stage. Right now, you're one of the best players in Europe, so just keep being that.
That's exactly. I would be pointing to Ronaldo saying, go and do what he's done. Go there when you're 36.
Yeah.
Because
if the boom's still there, they sold all the money.
Yeah. I mean, and you back Salah, don't you, to just stay in that condition? He's so well conditioned.
He's
barely ever injured. Yeah. And he obviously looks after him so well. And I think the way modern players are and the way he will think along those lines. Yeah. What do you think?
Now he's the Harvard Business School or getting involved with him, aren't he? He is the superstar of Liverpool, the Premier League. You know, I know he's not in the Champions League this season, but I think that's only a one-year blip, personally, from a Liverpool perspective. He's just, for me, watching him play and where we sit, especially when they're attacking the cop, where we sit in the press, it's an honour to watch him sometimes because you don't always see it. And like you say, you wouldn't have come away from that game and said, wow, Salah today. But so many times in the game, we just go, look how good he is, you know. And you look at the sort of the aura that he has around him when he gets the ball, you can almost just see the other team are a little bit like, oh God, what's he going to do? What is he? And, you know,
well, they have Paqueta dropping back into like a left-sided left-back role to double up on him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and, you know, in fairness to Emerson, who played left-back, he played all right. But you still see that, and he comes away, Salah scored, and, you know, could have had a couple of assists. Yeah. He's just, he's still Liverpool's main man, and don't expect that to change anytime soon.
It's you know, all the things he's added to his game over the years, the strength is the one for me, because he's not like a Haaland where you look at him and you immediately see a man mountain. He's relatively quite short, isn't he? But like you say there, that one, was it Ward-Prowse where he just held them off about four times?
Yeah, that was it. He finally got
the free kick. Yeah,
it's about 5'8", Ghosty, which is average height. It's average height.
he got fouled about three times in there with Ward-Prowse on the halfway line and finally got it given to him. And he just... Who was it last season? Was it Bernardo Silva against Man City where he just held him off? And he's added that to his game on top of everything else, and he's just, like Neil says, he's just the main man.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, before we finish off, great league win, but the serious stuff starts Wednesday, Gorsi. It's the world's greatest cup competition. Did you change the entire team? I mean, certainly the forward line. I love Jota coming on, by the way. And all the work, all the things we talk about Nunes, all the hard work he puts in, Jota comes on, scores. Just a James Pearce tap in, doesn't he, from the six-yard box. He comes in, doesn't he?
I mean, Klopp made 11 changes at last. He made 8 yesterday. I'd suspect probably be making about 9 or 10 again on Wednesday night. The thing is, now you can make those amounts of changes and the squad doesn't look too much lopsided towards youth or inexperience or anything like that. So Liverpool have got a really good squad, and I think the ability of the players that he's going to be able to choose from means that they could have a good go at this until they start being able to choose the likes of Salah and the Van Dijk's and whatever. So looking forward to seeing the Carabao Cup run this year.
Yeah, Klopp complains a lot about the schedule, but there's a real incentive to stay in this competition, isn't there?
There is, and I think also when you've got, like you say, those younger players where we're talking about the upside and the potential, but you also, you want to see them play it a little bit, and you don't want to be in a position where you've got Stefan Bajcetic and you say he hasn't played for 6 months because, you know, we haven't had a game to throw him in, or Harvey Elliott or whoever. So it really is a chance to keep a little bit of rhythm, and Liverpool did it brilliantly in the season before last, didn't they, where it felt like everyone was sort of in form or has had a good game recently, and you never ever felt like there was someone who's like, oh God, you know, going to have to put him in now. And I think back, they played Leicester that season actually, didn't they? And, you know, you think back to, I'm trying to think, but Billy Cometeo, I think, pretty much played centre-half. I'm sure he was going off
that Minamino game.
Tyler Morton played in midfield, and I'm sure Owen Beck ended up on the pitch. Yeah. It's not like that at the moment. It's like, well, Ben Doak's the sort of the rookie, Ben Doak's really good. You know, Bajcetic is probably going to play. I'd expect Jarrell Kwanzaa probably to come in, and you know, someone whose last game was an excellent one. Yeah. So yeah, there's a good excitement there. You've got Ryan Gravenberch, first Anfield start, probably you'd expect. I would.
Endo will play.
Chi Endo a bit more.
Endo, yeah. Elliot. You know, he's still got. Well, I don't know whether we'll ever see him again, but Thiago potentially could come back and be available.
Is he back? Where is Thiago at? By the way,
he was walking through the mix zone, or poking his head around in the mix zone yesterday with his children. But yeah, he wasn't part of the squad. I don't think he's back in full training yet.
Still
is
not
he?
Back.
No,
he's been renamed. I think Thiago not quite ready. I think that's Jürgen's sort of stock response, isn't it? Yeah. When he's asked about him.
Well, Thiago had a setback.
But there's a lot to sort of unpack in that midfield area and in the defence even as well. You know, you want to test these players, and Leicester will. You know, I would be disappointed, and I'd be amazed if Enzo Maresca turns up and says, don't worry about it, Anfield. Yeah. I think, you'll see Jamie Vardy, you'll see a few of the sort of the remnants from the Premier League team will play, and they'll try and sort of get amongst Liverpool. So it'll be a test for these players. But Liverpool's cup side at the moment is pretty strong, isn't it? And especially at home.
Yeah, one thing I would say is Liverpool's front options now give them a chance in this competition, whereas, you know, a couple of years ago, you're picking Takumi Minamino and you need them to perform at an 8 or a 9 out of 10, and same with Divock Origi, which didn't always happen, did it? But now it's, you know, any of those front five would be at home in a Premier League game. So
it's a good point.
Look at the Derby game last season. Leighton Stewart led the line against Derby. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain, Bobby Clark, I think, played in it. And he still won Liverpool, by the way, and good on them. But it was far less of a sort of intimidating team. Yeah. It was almost like a team that you just sort of, you know, you've gone, who's there? Okay, he needs a game.
Harvey Blair a couple of years ago. Was it Glatzel, was it, against Shrewsbury? Yeah.
No, it was Max Waltman.
Max Waltman.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot more senior, even though it's quite young in terms of, you know, age profile. There's a lot more experience definitely to play there. I think one thing I'm quite interested in is Stefan Bajcetic as this right back sort of experiment, because I thought we saw both edges of that sort of, or both sides of that coin. I thought he had a tough first half in Austria, but real sort of influence in it. And one of them where it was almost a little bit of a light bulb moment. You go, ooh, that could be something interesting going forward, you know, like, because he's such a talented player and good on the ball, and he is defensively very good. You know, he wins tackles, he's good in the air, he's got that about him.
He's got great anticipation, hasn't he, as to
when strength. To go, he's got sort of wiry strength. He's not a big lad or anything, is he? But he's just got that thing where if you went in for a 50-50 with him, you wouldn't fancy yourself coming out with the ball. You just think he'll win this. He's just got that strong sort of nature about him, and I'm really interested to see whether Liverpool sort of see any progress in that area, because right back's a bit of a problem for them, you know, longer term if Trent's not available. And, you know, we said Joe Gomez played well, but relying on his fitness, maybe having to use him at centre back, he's not the same kind of player in terms of, you know, ball playing skills or having sort of lots of touches in midfield. Bajcetic is one that I hadn't really considered it at any point. Mm. I thought, well, when he comes in, he'll go into that rotation for that number six. But he might be one that you look at and say, you know what, he can play right back. You know, James Milner sort of element to him.
Yeah. I think younger players are a bit more malleable as well, aren't they, tactically and positionally. You know, they haven't established themselves as 100 senior games as a number eight or whatever. Yeah. So maybe it's something to look at. I'm unsure whether it's tactic worth persevering with long term if Trent's not playing. I think Liverpool just need someone to play right back. They barely got a right back as it is, never mind someone who's got to be playing as a number eight while they're there. So, but the Bajcetic one is an interesting one long term.
Can confirm, watch the under 18s on Saturday, beat Everton. And they've got a left back called Kyle Kelly, and he was Trent for the team, and it was so noticeable in the game that Liverpool didn't have a left back. And the left side of the centre back, Wellity Lucky, had so much work to do. But it was very notable that they were doing it at under 18s level. They do it at under 21s level. I watched the Morecambe game last Tuesday, and they were doing it in that game with Josh Davidson going into there from right back. So I do think it is a tactic they are clearly going to persist with and sort of try and train players into doing it. I mean, it's a little tip for you. Get a coach on to talk about why he would do it, because to me I watch it and think it's really interesting, but I just sometimes I just watch the game happening and go,
Whereas you just put your left back.
Kyle Kelly, I'm not messing. He got the ball about three or four times, opened his body out, and then like looked as if to say, well, where's my left back? It's like, you're the left back. I do think that sometimes with Trent, if only Trent had Trent to play the ball to sometimes, you think that. But it's definitely a tactic that Liverpool are sort of all in on at the moment, you know, whether it persists or not, and whether it happens if Trent isn't available. But I think Bajcetic is probably the best sort of suited at the moment to replicate it.
It's interesting because I just assumed that they might move away from it this season.
Yeah, but
it seems like they're going the opposite direction. So can I get really quickly before we say goodbye, can I get a quick prediction? I know it's a hard one to predict, Ghosty, but I mean, I'm just going to go 3-1 because...
There's always some wildness going on in the Carabao Cup. That's why we love it, isn't it, Joe?
That's why we love it.
So I'm going to go with a 3-all draw and Liverpool win on pens.
Same as last time?
Yeah.
That's 3-all, wasn't it?
It was.
I'm going to Liverpool just do a really boring 2-0.
Yeah.
Just to sort of, one. They're not on the telly Ardy this week, so just one of them that's just... Oh, Liverpool won 2-0.
Yeah. I'm going to go 3-1 again, I think. I think they always concede, but
fourth
they just
game in a row.
Seem to do it. And
be so Vardy, won't it? Yeah. If they do concede, it'll be Vardy and he'll shush the cop or something like that.
Right, well, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back on Friday to talk that game and to look ahead to Tottenham, which is a huge, huge game at the weekend. Ghosty, thanks very much. Neil, thanks very much. Give yourself one final plug.
Just follow me. I'm worth it. no, neilj.substack.com, YouTube, and at Neil Jones Goal, even though I don't work for them anymore.
Cheers, gents.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.